Marquette basketball fans. Welcome to a special edition of the Golden Break. I'm your host, Adam Woke. Shout out production team, Jeff Gibellina, Dr. Mike Keegan, Matt Mikus. This show goes because of their support. You may say, Adam, why is this a special edition? You know why it's special? Because it's Tyler Kolek weekend. And today we are joined by the Marquette point guard. It was a fantastic discussion. But before we get into that, I just want to touch a little bit on Seton Hall and Providence. The first thing I want to talk about is Kerr. If you go back and listen to the Xavier game, I talked about Kerr having a really tough time in that game. We played oh so down the stretch. Kerr struggled closing. Kerr struggled keeping his hands up. He struggled on help defense. And what was so impressive about that first 8, 10, 12 half by Kerr was that he came out with a vengeance. And this speaks to something much bigger than this game. It speaks to something much bigger than this season. One of the things that we wanted as Marquette fans, people who are dedicated to the success of this team, who really care, who really get behind this program, is we want to see long-term success. We want to be a perennial contender. And that is about the program that you build. You need to have a head coach who's going to build something that is much bigger than any game, that's much bigger than any moment. And one thing, one of many things that Shaka has instilled into the culture of this team is response. We hear it all the time. The players talk about it. Shaka talks about it. The assistants talk about it. How do you respond? You know, a lot of times when we talk about words and like within a program like this, and Shaka's got a lot of them. I mean, there are some pillars that he has put around the building that he talks about all the time, that the players talk about. You know, a lot of times, you know, we can hear some of that and kind of just feel like, all right, well, what does that mean? You know, it's just a bunch of fluff. You know, it doesn't carry a lot of weight. Is it stuff we should spend time thinking about? And I think sometimes that's true when you have coaches that don't know how to take a concept like that and instill it into a mindset. Seeing Kerr come out in the fashion that he did in the Seton Hall game speaks to what Shaka is building in this program, speaks to the long-term success of this team, in my opinion. Because if we continue to see those pillars become a mindset in these players, and listen, I could go back. I could give you a lot more examples than just this with Kerr. I think there are a lot of examples that you can come to with this team. But I want to highlight this one with Kerr because it was so blatant. Because I literally just talked about the bad game Kerr had. And when he was, that block party was a blast. I was laughing my ass off by the time he got to like the sixth block in this, because it was so much fun. That was probably one of the most fun half of basketball I've had as a Marquette fan in a really long time. Not that, and I'm not trying to downplay other halves or things, but that was just so much fun to watch. And it made me giddy about the future when thinking about the word response and what it has meant in this program. Second, Willard, did you think zoning us was a good idea? Listen, I get if you're down a lot by a team and your man defense is getting scorched and you're like, God, we just got to switch it up. Like, we got to get a different look. We just got to change something about this game. So let's deploy some zone. Zone was part of his original package strategy. Like early in the game, before this was a blowout, he was mixing in zone defense. And listen, unless you are like a Jim Boeheim coach where like you can zone for an entire game and you're so good at it that you can handle the, like, I get it. Sorry, Willard, you're not that. You're not Jim Boeheim. I don't know what else you need to see as a coach to know to stop doing that. I'm not, you know, whether it was right for them to boo or not, you know, whatever, you could debate that. You could talk about it. I don't know enough about Seton Hall basketball to know where they're at with Willard. I know, I think he's been there for 5-6 years maybe now and hasn't quite been exactly what they were hoping for. But, you know, when John Fenta was on this pod, he said this is probably Willard's best team. So when you see them getting smoked the way they were by Marquette in that first half, I could definitely understand a fandom's want to be frustrated. And again, I don't know his entire resume there, but if Willard is doing stuff like this, if he's going to zone guys, if he's got a lot of other coaching snafus like this one, I can understand fans being upset about it. Let's next talk about something I think that is evolving in a very positive direction for this offense, about really Lewis and Morcell's ability to create. You've heard me talk about what I love about the blueprint of this offense and this team's ability to score within their system, and that system allows them to score in a variety of ways, whether it's the second half of the UConn game where we saw this team's even ability to establish some post every once in a while, the cutters, the pick and roll, like whatever it is. I think within this system, we have such a variety of ways of scoring. But here's what I think is taking us to the next level. If you guys saw on our Twitter feed, I put up shot charts for Lewis and Morcell, and I did that to kind of set up this point here that I want to make. Even the best possessions where you're working your ass off and you're screening hard and you're sprinting and you're moving and the ball's going, there's just times where the defense is going to stop you. There's times where your system, you know, just there's just possessions where that's going to happen. What separates a really good team from a great team is, do you have a guy with 10 seconds left with the ball in his hands who can create? And there isn't anybody right now that's going to tell me that Lewis can't be that guy, because he can. Those mid-range jumpers that he's sort of just jab-stepping guys and being able to make, right? His ability to still attack from the arc whenever he needs to spin, get a dude on his back. Like, Lewis, 100%, in my opinion, has established himself as someone who can make his own shot when we need it. What's going to be important for him is for him to know when to do that and when not to do that. And because I believe so much in him and Shaka's relationship, I think Shaka's going to be able to put him in that position to do that. Now, with Morcell, I think he is absolutely now coming into his own with his ability to create. And I talked last week with how impressed I've been with now his ability to finish at the hoop. And when you have now both of these guys who are able to just, either Morcell's ability to get to the hoop, Lewis's ability to create his own shot at the end of a possession, if you couldn't get one off in your system, man, is that dangerous? Is that dangerous? People are going to have to start talking me down on this team, because I just keep feeling better and better about the run. I feel Sweet 16. I feel Elite 8. Like, I think it's within this team's ability, especially with what we're seeing in those two guys' ability to create on their own. One thing I didn't like in that game, I just really didn't like the passive offensive possessions when we were up big. I understand the want to just start to kill some clock, right? Less clock, less possessions, gives the opponent less ability to come back. And I think in spots, it's okay. I think we were doing it for too long, because here's a problem with our team. Because I don't think like those passive possessions are players being passive. I think that's coach implemented. I think our coach 100% has the ability to leash these guys and unleash these guys. They will respond to whatever this coaching staff tells them. I truly believe that about these guys. I don't think that this was them taking possessions off. This clearly was strategic. And I think, you know, I wonder what they thought the coaches did when they got back and talked about after them, because I feel like those passive possessions killed our offense's momentum. I think we're better when we're moving and we're spending some of the shot clock, you know, cutting and trying to establish a way to score. Like, I don't really look at it as like running up the score on a team if we continue to run our offense like normal. I think it's actually what our offense needs to stay aggressive. And because when that starts, because we were missing a lot of shots, now we're getting out in transition, right? And we're not always super great in transition defense. And it started to let Seton Hall back in this game. I think that's what got Seton Hall back in the game, was our decision to start really letting the shot clock go. Again, I'm not saying you don't do it at all. I just think we did it too much in that game, and I hope we took something away from it. Two big stats I just wanted to point out from this game. Seton Hall's second chance field goal percentage, 33%. I'm going to harp on that stat. You know why I like it. It's how we mask our rebounding problem, and it shows again. And also, Seton Hall, 3-for-16 for shots in the paint. That's 18%. This team continues to establish itself as a dominant defensive team at protecting the hoop. On to the Providence game. I mean, there's no way that play call was for Tyler to just take someone off the dribble. Like, I didn't understand that last play design. There was no cutting action. There was no screeners. Like, there's no way it was just Tyler take the ball to the hoop, especially when you put Cam and Elliot in the game. Like, they're not – I just didn't understand that. Like, I really would love to hear what Shaka had to say about that. I can't imagine that's what they called. I hope that's not what they called. You know, in the end, it was an absolute war. That's what Big East games are. This, you knew that going into it, Providence was going to play a much tougher game than they did the first time around. They're not going to get their doors blown off and then come to this one and not play with full effort. And to be honest with you, I think that it was their physicality. Especially, you know, Providence's physicality defensively. We could not get our screen and roll game in any position. They were doing an awesome job of not only fighting over and making sure they were keeping the ball handler in front of them. Like, we couldn't get an edge on any defender, and they were sprinting and covering the roller. I mean, this was a defensive war. That's really what it was. You know, I loved actually what we were doing to defend the block. You know, we did a few things really well in this game to keep the ball out of the block, from three-quarter front to a full front. Our backside help deny the entry pass was good. We did a great job of high hands, low hands, you know, one hand up, one hand low to deny the bounce and above the top to keep it in. Our guards were doing a nice job of sinking when the ball did get into the block to kind of keep them there. I mean, I think we had like 20 deflections in the first half, and that made a huge difference because they had also 9 turnovers in the first half. And entry passes into the block are one of the biggest ways that you could turn the ball over. And we were turning them over. But, you know, in the end, the other part that killed us was, you know, this is a game where the rebounding did get us. You know, the stats, this is right hot off the game. So the stats for what our field goal, what Providence field goal percentage on second chance points was, I'm not sure, but it probably was much better than the 33% against Seton Hall. And, you know, they just threw us around. Like, I didn't think we lacked effort. I actually thought we were doing a nice job of, like, finding a dude's ceiling. Like, they were literally jumping over us, moving us out of position. You know, at the end of the game, Kerr's on the ground. And Providence is pulling the rebound down and comes up. He gets up off the floor and then fouls him. I was just so frustrated with what was happening in the rebounding. And I want to go to something Ben Steele said just about when you look at the physical nature of this team. I mean, look at the size difference in this game. Just let's look at weight. Croswell, 245. Nate, 260. Oso and Kerr both weigh 215. I felt like they were trying to be physical, but, like, even when we had position, they were pinning us in under the hoop. Like, I just felt like we were getting moved wherever they could on the block, and it was super frustrating to watch. You know, in the end, it's a tough loss, especially when you think about trying to win the Big East championship. I know there's talk out there about Providence not being able to make up three games in the Big East. Now we're three games behind Providence, who I think is now 8-1, and that's our fourth loss in the Big East. That game stings. It doesn't kill us. In the end, it was going to be a big ask to get in there and win it. Of course, we keep it close. It's what Marquette does. You know, they're not going to give up. They never did. I thought the effort was great. But in the end, this was a game that, they just out-physicaled us. Like, I hate to say it, but they were just more physical than us. But that's all right. We got Nova Wednesday night. You know, let's respond, right? We talked about this program being built on learning from these moments. Let's kick it over to the interview with Tyler. I think this is probably one of the best interviews we've done so far here in the pod. I think it's going to really give Marquette fans an insight to some of the things that not only makes Tyler great, but I think makes this program special. All right, we're joined here by Marquette guard Tyler Kolek. Tyler, thank you so much for coming on, man.
Yeah, I appreciate you having me on.
Let's talk about your path to Marquette. The transfer portal seems like a wild experience for players. Can you tell us a little bit about what it was like being in the transfer portal and what drew you to Shaka Smart and Marquette?
Yeah, like you said, the transfer portal is a wild experience. I mean, so how it works, you have to email your compliance department at your school, letting them know you want to transfer, giving them your information, letting them know that you want other schools to contact you. And then, so once they fill out that information and actually put you in the portal, I mean, the frenzy starts right away. I mean, I think I get the email that I was in the portal at 8:59 p.m. And by 9:01, I got my first call from a school. So, I mean, it's pretty crazy how people kind of, and coaches just kind of sit on that and kind of just wait for dudes to enter. And, you know, they just bounce at their opportunity. But, you know, Coach Smart kind of was there from the beginning and kind of, you know, what I wanted in the transfer process was kind of the same thing that I wanted from the first time around. Just, you know, a head coach that was really heavily involved, and, you know, a head coach that really believed in me, because at the end of the day, I've always thought the head coach is the one that makes the substitutions. The head coach is the one that calls the plays for you. And so head coach puts the ball in your hands. And so, you know, you can have a great relationship in the recruiting process with an assistant, but you really want that relationship with the head coach.
So let's talk about the head coach, because he's spoken on many occasions about you being asked to do things that are new for you, that this role for you this year is a transition. And I want to help people understand what that means for you in the gym and at practice. What skills have you started to put more emphasis on now at Marquette that is different? What are some drills in practice that have kind of challenged that skill set for you?
I wouldn't necessarily say he challenges me from a skill set standpoint. It's more so from kind of the leadership standpoint, kind of getting outside myself and, you know, being an everyday guy to hold everybody else accountable. Because, you know, we got a lot of young guys on the team. So even though I am, quote unquote, redshirt freshman or sophomore, whatever you want to call it, I'm still one of the fourth oldest guys on the team, maybe. And so every day he's kind of just, you know, challenging me to get outside myself and help the young guys, because I have been through a year of college basketball and, you know, played a lot of minutes, and those guys kind of, you know, on the opposite end and trying to figure it out and find themselves, you know. So it's been good, though. I accept the challenge most days. I mean, some days, you know, you kind of not having it or not really as interested in the practice as, you know, they want you to be, but you just got to fight through those days and stay positive to put in a good deposit and make the overall day good.
For a lot of fans, right, when we heard you were coming over, when we go back and watched clips of you at George Mason, right, you don't get a full feel for sort of what your role on the court was. To us, it kind of came off as like, oh, this kid's a shooter, right, which you definitely were at George Mason. But do you think that role on the court is different than at George Mason here at Marquette? Like, is it because to us, it just seemed like you were a shooter.
Yeah, I mean, last year, anytime I had daylight, I was shooting. I mean, I was kind of, the Cam Jones or the Greg Elliott of the scouting report. Just, you know, don't really even let him catch. Don't let him see light at three-point line. You know, but this year, I mean, the role has completely changed. I was on the ball a little bit last year. Like, I started at the point probably 9 games, but even when I was at the point, I was kind of just initiating offense to kind of, you know, pass to the wing that would initiate it. And then we would get into our offense, kind of just more so just bringing it up, not really kind of calling the offense out, calling plays, you know, making plays especially. But I mean, I only averaged maybe 2.5 assists last year, but you know, it was so much different because, you know, I'd pass to the wing and the guy would take a 2 dribble pull up and they wouldn't give me that assist. But now, you know, they give you those assists at the higher levels you go. And like, I've always thought that they were assists. I mean, Coach Smith always says, you know, it doesn't matter how many dribbles the guy takes. If I pass to him to get them the shot, it should be an assist. So we always go back and forth with that. But, you know, I felt like I was more of a better playmaker than people thought last year, just because that number was low. But I felt like I was still, you know, making the right plays, making the right passes. But, you know, what the team needed me to do was to shoot and was to score last year. And, you know, what this team needs me to do is similar. I mean, I got to make the right play, make the right pass, control the offense. But, you know, now teams aren't really – they're not really respecting me as a scorer now. So, you know, I kind of got to get back in that mindset and go from there.
Let's talk a little bit about that mindset as a scorer. You know, I know that this isn't necessarily the shooting year that you probably wanted to start. These last 2 weeks, I could definitely tell you're starting – to kind of come around, you know. And I've heard Shaka talk about that you've had moments where you have been frustrated. I get it, right? It's natural to be frustrated in those moments. What have you been working on to get your jumper where you want it? And how have you been able to not let that frustration boil over into other parts of your game? Because everything else, man, I mean, has been at such a high level.
Yeah, I mean, the way I look at it is I'm playing 30 plus minutes a game with shooting 20% from three. I mean, that's the best thing that I do in some cases. I mean, in the summer I came in, coach had a bunch of these shooting drills. You know, if you had the record for the shooting drill, your picture and name was up on this big screen. And it was like a slideshow. And, you know, I think I probably had 75% of those shooting records. So everybody, even leading up to the season, all my teammates, all my coaches, you know, they all thought the same thing, that I could really shoot the ball, while I was showing them that I could really pass the ball as well. But, you know, as the season started, you know, the role changed. But I mean, I wouldn't necessarily say that I've kind of changed anything to try and get my shot to, I don't know if you say where it was last year, but, you know, I kind of just trust my work and stay on the same routine and not really trying. Because if you think about it too much, that's what I was kind of doing. And, you know, got to the UCLA game and, you know, a few games after that, maybe before that, I was really trying to think what was wrong with my shot. And, you know, now I'm to the point where, you know, I can't really think about how it's going in. Just, you got to kind of, you know, one of my coaches told me last year, just how it feels matters more than if it's going in or not. You know, now I feel like it's been feeling a lot better this past month.
That you compartmentalized that. I love how you talked about, so how you had to get yourself after the UCLA game to a place where you couldn't spend too much time thinking about it. Was that something you evolved within yourself? Is that something the coaching staff kind of helped you get to mentally?
I mean, you know, mentally the confidence kind of comes from not being benched, from not being able to make shots. I mean, you kind of gain the confidence from knowing, like, even if I am missing shots, I'm still going to be out there. I'm still going to, you know, be helping my team win. So that's kind of where my stability came from. And, you know, kind of like a sense of relief. I mean, because I do so many other things for the team other than shoot. I mean, once that starts to come around, it'll really be something special for us.
Want to talk about your role in the screen and roll game. It's a huge part of this team's offense. And, you know, opponents have a variety of different ways that they can attack screen and rolls, right? And as a ball handler, especially the guy initiating, you kind of have to be the person who identifies what they're doing and attack accordingly.
I'd love to know how you see the court based on how the team is defending, you know? So for example, if a team is icing the ball screen or dropping like Xavier did, what's your strategy as a point guard?
Yeah. So I would say the first 4 minutes, I'm really just trying to, you know, feel out the game and see what they're trying to do to, you know, combat what we're trying to do. And, you know, that's kind of, we've had a few slow starts. You know, that's one area where we can really improve on is the first 4 minutes, that first round that coach says. But, you know, that's kind of that round where you know, I'm kind of going back and forth playing chess with the defense and, you know, seeing what works, seeing what doesn't work. Not really like in full attack mode just yet. Just because, you know, you don't want to make the wrong read if you kind of see something in the possession before. You kind of want to see it a few times before you do it. But, you know, that's really where Coach Smith helps me out a lot, you know, coming out of that first media timeout, really trying to determine what we want to do, how we want to attack them. And, you know, teams now are starting to kind of, like you said, be in that drop coverage where, you know, I get a step on the guy and, you know, the big's kind of just retreating. So kind of, they're just kind of playing one-on-one with me and not really helping off anybody else, any of the shooters or anything. They kind of just want me to go in there and score and see if I can beat them. So, you know, that's what
And I think that's kind of interesting because I've talked about this on the pod. I actually think it's almost more important for you to be scoring at the hoop based on your role in the screen role, because when a team like them or Xavier's dropping and you can keep them honest by the finishing at the hoop, hitting a floater, that's really going to change the dynamic in the way that they strategize. How do you feel about your ability around the hoop? Because that, to me, I've seen huge improvements from you in that area as well.
Yeah, I mean, recently I've been good to miss one layup a game. one open layup a game. I mean, I don't know. I feel like it's all been a mental game. And, you know, last year I really only shot threes and floaters. So I haven't really gotten to many floaters this year. Just because when I'm in that area to take a floater, now more so I'm kind of, that's the sweet spot to, you know, if a guy helps over, you know, because a lot of teams like to help when you're taking a layup at the rim or the roller. They don't really guard the floater area or the pull-up area because that's kind of the shot that they want you to take, the long two. They don't really want layups or threes. So, you know, right in that floater area is when you can read the help defense. You know, that's kind of when I make my decisions, and that's where I got to get to the mindset of, you know, shooting that one instead of now that everybody's staying home and not helping.
One of my favorite things about you as a player is your defense off the ball. You play kind of like a free safety. You roam passing lanes. You cover gaps. You step over to help. You know, Shaka's defensive resume speaks for itself. What are the best lessons he's taught you as a defender? And how does he teach you as a team to communicate so well? Because, I mean, I just love watching you guys yell and point and rotate. And that's to me always been one of the hardest things to instill in a team.
Yeah, it kind of starts from day one. I mean, you can't come to practice without a voice, without energy. And, you know, that's 1 through 13, everybody on our team. And so, you know, he kind of, you know, like you said, his defensive pedigree kind of speaks for itself. So we know that he has the blueprint for that. And, you know, we all kind of bought into what he thinks and what he believes and kind of just gotten behind his mantras and stuff like that. I mean, he loves floor slaps. He loves, you know, being deep in a stance, talking to each other. And, you know, that's what great defensive teams do. And, you know, that's what great teams do and those who win. So,
what is the hardest defensive drill that Shaka puts you through?
The hardest defensive drill. Well, for me, like you said, I feel like I'm a better off ball, you know, team defender more so than, you know, a one-on-one stopper, like maybe Daryl Morcell is. So probably that we play one-on-one every day, just from like, we'll either go from the, you know, a post up or top of the key transition kind of guy running at you. And then like, there's just the catch on the wing, you know, no dribble one-on-one. So that's probably the toughest defensive drill, you know, because we got great guys we normally go blue against white in every drill. So same thing with that, you know, we got first, it's kind of like the first five versus the other guys. And so, you know, we got great guys, Cam Jones, really hard to guard. Stevie Mitchell is super fast. And, you know, Marion Ellis is one of those guys where, you know, next year I wouldn't be surprised if he's playing a lot of minutes just because, you know, his development over the last year has been really good. And he's super quick with the ball, athletic. He can shoot a little bit. So, I mean, all those guys are tough to guard. So I'd say that one-on-one drill.
Speaking of drills, in the Seton Hall game, they kind of FS1 went into the huddle with Shaka. And he talked about, you know, if the dribbler beats you on the blitz, five-on-four drill. Can you tell us a little bit about that drill and what it teaches you as a team?
Yeah, it's kind of just five offensive guys around the perimeter, four defensive guys inside, or so two guys at the elbows, two guys at the blocks, and it's kind of just playing. So he has the ball, he'll throw it out to somebody, and then from there you're just playing, flying around, trying to, you know, get the stop, and then you got to get the rebound. So, and a lot of the game is that it's a compromised defense, you know, that you got to kind of, we call it fix it and fly around. And, you know, it's not going to be perfect, but as long as you're giving, you know, energy and effort to the next guy and, you know, helping your teammates and just kind of going all out, then, you know, you're going to, it helps a lot in the games for sure.
Film is a huge part of a professional basketball player's life. How do you work with your coaches to improve your play as an individual, but also as a team?
Yeah, I mean, my film, I feel like, is really important because, you know, it's kind of initiates the offense and, you know, kind of gets guys to where they got to be. And, you know, because if we start off the possession, you know, not where we want to be, then we don't really take the best shots for our team. So, you know, watching film with Coach Smart, really being able to dive into, you know, at the beginning of the year, we were going through every single one of my pick and rolls, every one that I came off of, making sure that, you know, I made the right read. And if I didn't, you know, seeing where that right read would have been and maybe where I should have passed it to, or maybe those times when I should have shot it. I actually did for this past game, Seton Hall. I had a bunch of opportunities to, you know, he loves when I shoot. He wants me to shoot. And, you know, I'm standing on the side, Justin's posting up, and I'm the closest guy to him. If my guy helps, digs down, we call it, you know, he's always like, shoot it right when I catch it off of that. So, I mean, that kind of, you know, having a coach that really wants you to succeed, wants you to shoot. And even when you're going through things, it really helps. But, you know, and just watching those things on film is kind of when you gain more confidence in yourself and in your game.
We had Coach Nevada Smith on earlier this year, and we talked a lot with him about his role with the Miami Heat and what he has sort of gleaned from analytics. How do you use analytics for yourself? What are things you pay attention to? Or is it something you're like, you know what, I don't even want to look at that stuff?
Yeah, I kind of let those guys worry about the analytics. I mean, there's so many numbers now that you can rabbit hole into. I mean, adjusted offense, adjusted defense, you know, points per possession, all those numbers. I mean, those are kind of even like the ones that are out there for everybody. And then there's so many other layers to it. You know, I kind of let the coaches and the GAs come up and, you know, just tell me all those, and not really all of them, but because you don't really want to know, you kind of just want to play it. You know, there comes to a certain point, all these analytics, you just got to have a feel for the game and, you know, just play. You can't be worried about that stuff.
Is there one that they bring to you that you find helpful?
Yeah, we actually do. We call something called a dot hand, which is on defense. You know, when the shooter's going up, whatever hand they are, like say I'm left-handed. So you want to, if you're running at me, you're going to put your right hand up, your right hand, your dot hand. So we kind of do the stat where it's, you know, after the games we go through, dot hand contests, no contests, and just regular contests. And, you know, it's the point per shot. That's what they go through. And you know, the dot hand's always like, it's always right around 12%. And then, you know, the no contest is always the highest, and the contest is always the second highest. So, you know, it kind of just proves that, you know, his defensive philosophies really, really work. And, you know, that's something that we take pride in.
Well, in the detail, I mean, to know with the shooter's hand and for you to use the opposite makes sense, right? It limits fouls, but that's like the detail that I feel like Shaka goes into during the DePaul game. FS1 did it where those guys were mic'd the entire game, which was really cool for us. I'm sure you don't need to see that because you hear it every day, but it was awesome to hear like how much Shaka drills down to every defensive detail. Like that has to help you as a player.
Yeah. I mean, just those little things, those little nuances. I mean, we also, another thing that I really like, we call it like baseball closeout. So say you're closing out to a guy, maybe foul line extended to the corner. He's most likely going to drive baseline. You kind of want to take that away. So you're closing out. Maybe if it's on the right wing, you're closing out with your left foot higher than the other one, kind of not letting him go baseline. And that's kind of when you cut him off and then he's got to move it the other way. So, you know, little things like that help me out really a lot. Cause you know, I'm not the fastest guy. I'm not moving my feet with the best of them, but you know, I'm smart enough on defense to really, if you give me like those basic concepts like that, that really helps me out. So.
Well, I think it helped you very much so in you know, shutting down Colin Gillespie, because I thought you did a fantastic job with him. And that kind of leads me to my next question. Like, what's with opposing crowds being obsessed with you? Like, they seem to have this thing for you. I don't know if it's envy, but everyone should want a player like with you. You seem to use it as fuel. You kind of get into it. Like, how do you channel that to affect your game positively? And I have to ask, how good did that good night kiss feel to Nova?
Yeah, I mean, it's been 3 or 4 games now when opposing crowds have gotten on me. I mean, at Villanova, every time I touched the ball from the beginning of the game, they were booing me, and only me. So I don't know why that was. I didn't do anything to them before. Kansas State, they were same thing. They were chanting, "Tyler sucks" the whole game. I gave them a wave goodbye after we beat them too. So, I mean, I love that stuff. I get into it. I mean, you know, some people may say that the most hated men in college basketball, you know, I could be on that list. You know, that's not a bad list to be on. I mean, other opposing teams don't like you, but you know, your fans embrace you and love you. So that's all that I care about is our fans. So.
No, absolutely. You know, on the last pod after that Nova game, I comped you to Joakim Noah, because not even close to being the same player, but he like gets that vitriol from everybody. And, you know, I'm a big Bulls fan and I ended up falling in love with him. And I realized, man, these are the guys that I should love. You're right. These are the guys we want on our team. So kudos for you, man, for being able to handle that and have fun with it too.
Yeah. Cause it is hard. I mean, that Kansas State game, I think I was 0-7 from 3 and, you know, I don't think I scored a point, but I think I maybe had 9 assists, 6 rebounds, something like that. So, you know, it does mess with you a little bit. But like the first couple times, like when you don't really realize why they're doing it. I mean, I didn't play in front of a crowd last year. And you know, I've never played in front of this size of crowds, in my life. So, I mean, it's been pretty cool. I mean, I enjoy it. You can see I have a little bit of fun with it.
Before I let you go, I've got to ask this, because I've heard Cam and Stevie talk about one-on-one at practice. I've heard you talk about one-on-one at practice. And so that's like had me rabbit holing to like, if there was a tournament of one-on-one, make it, take it, of you guys against each other, who would win? Because for me, like, I'm picking Elliot, because I feel like if he gets on a heater, you're not getting the ball back. And if he loses it, he's kind of got the size and length to kind of defend everyone. But I want to hear from you, like, one-on-one tournament, make it, take it, who's winning?
Yeah, so we played a lot of one-on-one when we first got here, like king of the court, you kind of call it, like with multiple guys. And I've never lost a day of one-on-one since I've been here, like either one-on-one with any single person or group one-on-one. I've never lost. So I would say myself, because, you know,
there we go.
People see a lot of my game just passing it. But, you know, if you came to one of my workouts, I'd probably be one of the best shooters you've seen. Not to kind of toot my horn, but a lot of people, you know, I always see all these people, whatever they say on Twitter, on social media, everything like that. I mean, it's hard not to let it get to you, but, you know, I just go in the gym and make a bunch of shots and then those thoughts go away. So, I mean, I don't know. I would say Cam Jones is a really good scorer. He gets on the heater. I don't know if I would say Greg, because, you know, I don't know if Greg could guard anybody, or, you know, he makes a lot of shots, but, you know, I don't know.
You think you can get around Greg is what you're telling me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Don't let him hear that, man. Don't let him hear that. At next practice, man, he's going to have you today. He's like, you and me, man. One-on-one, let's go.
We're on the same team in practice. He's our sixth guy, so he doesn't have to – I don't have to guard him.
Well, Tyler, thank you so much for your time, man. I really appreciate it. Best of luck. Big game, man. This Providence one, this is a huge one. Best of luck to you guys, and maybe we'll get you on again soon.
For sure. Thanks for having me.
What an absolute treat to be joined by Tyler Cole. That was a blast. Thank you, Tyler, for coming on. This has been another fantastic week of Marquette Hoops. It is so much fun to bring this show to the greatest fans in college basketball. Don't forget, we've got the live pod February 26th at Uncle Buck's National Marquette Day. Get out there, come see us. And this week, we will be joined by the one, the only, Jarrell McNeil, who's gonna help us break down the game. Thank you so much for joining us. Have a fantastic week.